There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Benched with Bubba, episode 37. On tonight's episode, we will be taking a deeper dive into the world of MLB stats with our guest, Casey Bogoslaw of RObaseball.com. He has some podcasts on RObaseball.com and helps handle the @MLBBarrelAlert account. Casey, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Bubba. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Before we get into the world of stats and StatCast and barrels and all the good stuff we have there, tell us about RObaseball.com, what you guys have to offer over there, what you guys are, what the twist of on baseball and stats and all that good stuff you have going on over there.
Sure. So we actually just launched in last July, so it hasn't yet quite been a year just yet, but we're approaching the year anniversary. What happened was I have a friend who runs was at least beginning to attempt to create a sports empire of American sports in the United Kingdom, and he started a football website called thereadoptional.com, and eventually wanted to start a baseball chapter as well for Major League Baseball coverage. We get a lot of audience from the United Kingdom, but of course a lot of American audience as well. So RO Baseball was created back in July. And what my main thought process was when I went to start to plan the idea behind the website was to be a site for people that were a little bit more advanced statistic inclined, but we also did not want to necessarily scare people off that weren't maybe up to speed on, you know, some of the new stuff that has come out. So we wanted to provide a narrative behind everything. And we try to do a little bit of a whole bunch of stuff, showing our true love of the game on the website. So we do a lot of historical stuff, talking about the players from, you know, many years ago. We do fun things like talk about uniforms and the new uniforms when they come out. So we do all kinds of stuff, but we always try to go back to having some statistical basis for our site. We, of course, we're going off of, you know, the Fangraphs and the baseball perspectives of the world, but we wanted to do a little bit of a different spin on things that are shown by those sites. They're obviously great sites, but we wanted to be kind of the bridge in between there and not, necessarily be a site that, you know, wants to, you know, kind of stick their nose up at people that don't use the advanced stats, but just be a site that people who love baseball can go and enjoy and, you know, somewhere at least they can hopefully find something that they like on the site.
No, and I like that a lot because as many that listen to my podcast know, I'm not the biggest stat guy in the world, and I'm embracing it, and I'm learning it, and I'm becoming more of a stat guy. But I like that approach because as much as I do like Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus, and they're very, very good sites, if you're not into stats, they are intimidating. And right. You start reading an article, and you can get lost very quickly, very, very quickly.
And we wanted to, you know, I did forget to mention that our slogan is explaining the why, and that's what we really wanted to do. And we don't want to necessarily make it, you know, too high level. We want to know why, you know, we're watching right now. Eric Thames has 2 home runs today, and he's got, all of these home runs out so far this year, and he hasn't played in MLB since 2013. He was playing over in Korea the last 2 years. How is he coming out of, you know, necessarily nowhere, you know, why is, you know, what is he doing differently than what he did, in, you know, back then, and what happened in Korea that can help him do that, stuff like that, that we can really explain the why of the baseball. Why do teams make these trades? Why do they call certain people up for the minors? We try to go in depth on all of those moves and kind of, you know, explain our reasoning on why we see that those things are happening.
No, and that's a great thing to do. It'll definitely help people understand it a lot more, instead of just kind of looking at it with a blank face by the end and going, what did I just read for the last 5 minutes? So that's very good. I'm looking forward to seeing more of what you have, because since I started following you guys a few weeks ago, it's been very, very good stuff. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to what else you guys have to offer. StatCast. StatCast is very, very interesting. Brings a whole new element to watching baseball. There's defensive, offensive, pitching. There's all kinds of angles to it. They track, like, how far a guy runs to catch a fly ball, exit velocity off a bat, launch angles, how, like, spin rate on a curveball, all kinds of things. Like, everything you can think of, and they keep thinking of new things. Like, there's more and more that come out. When you're looking at StatCast, obviously we'll get into your barrel stuff. When you're looking at StatCast, what are some of the important ones that you're kind of think you're looking at from, I guess, a fantasy angle or just baseball in general?
Sure. I think the important thing to really remember with any advanced stat, and I know that they come on varying levels of, you know, I guess how much you have to read into to really understand. If you have to pull up a glossary of their terms, maybe it's not necessarily meeting its goal. But, you know, of course, you're able to go into this sport and all of these new creations as much as you want to. And it's on a personal level. But what I, you know, when I try to, you know, what I do with my Twitter accounts, I try to make it as understandable for, you know, the common crowd as possible. You know, whether it's, you know, your older father watching the game that's, you know, grew up with batting average and RBI, and some of the stuff just seems foreign to him and he doesn't want to see it. I do think that MLB has done a good job at making these things not too, I guess, overwhelming. I think MLB has done a good job. We talked about Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus a lot, and that, you know, that is for a certain audience. I think what MLB is trying to do is bring the audience that loves the game of baseball and just adding more to the game. So we all grew up, you know, I'm 33 years old. We all grew up when we were watching the game, and I'm sure Bubba, you too, that we saw the pitch velocity when we watched these games. We knew that, you know, Nolan Ryan threw 100 miles per hour, but no one ever talked about how fast the ball was going off the bat. And now this, what we have. And of course, that's a big part of barrels, which I know we'll get into a bunch soon. The other thing is that, and actually today was a big launch day for Baseball Savant, which is kind of the MLB, that's the URL that shows all of these, you know, amazing stats that they have. And to give you more background, basically they put a new camera system in every single park in 2015. It went live in all 30 stadiums in 2015. 2016 was kind of the first time they started introducing some of the statistics, and then now 2017, they're just pumping out as much as possible. And you can go into it as much as you want. Like I said, as deep as you want. But like you said, whatever angle you want to look at, there's something there for you. If you want to see why is a pitcher succeeding when they didn't succeed last year, or vice versa, there is something that would be there for you, whether it's the thing that you mentioned, spin rate on the ball. Of course, there's stuff, you know, as simple as, you know, what corners of the strike zone are they hitting? As for the defensive crowd, which is a growing crowd, they have this new stat called catch probability, which I think even that term is very, very simple. You know, it's just how probable was that ball caught. We all like to judge these things by the eye test and say, oh, that looked like a difficult catch. That didn't look like a difficult catch. How did he miss such an easy catch? Now we kind of have a number to back up what we think we saw or what we might not have seen. So that's what they're all doing. Now, I know it's been met by some vitriol as well, but I think people on Twitter just like to complain. Of course, there's always that part of the audience that has to complain about everything. But I do know that it seems like now every time we're on, you know, if you're following a Twitter feed, if you're following your Twitter feed along with the baseball game, every single event on the baseball field is now coming with a number attached to it. which I understand maybe some people don't like all the time. You know, mute those people, I guess, or, you know, don't follow them. Or, you know, I guess just ignore it. You know, of course, they're always going to hopefully provide some narrative or some reasoning why those numbers are important. But I've heard it. I've seen both the reaction myself. I love all the stuff that they're doing at StatCast. I like additional data. I'm a numbers guy. And I know that you have a bunch of fantasy listeners on this audience. I think that's this stuff that they're coming up with is going to help us understand the game. And I think most importantly for not only fantasy fans, but fans of, you know, any of the 30 teams, it's going to help us predict to maybe what we think we're going to see moving forward. I think that's what these numbers are really going to do when they really break down to a very, very granular level. We can see when things start to change, when things, certain trends start to appear. And, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, it's all about trying to be smarter than the guy next to you at the bar, right?
Yep, exactly. And you said it best, going back to the beginning, I'm 33 as well. And it's funny you mentioned that. You don't really ever – like, for instance, you remember the big unit just throwing cheese. And the first time you really remember, at least I remember you hearing about exit velocity, is when McGuire took him deep in Seattle and he hit, like, the back of the Metrodome. Yeah. And everyone goes, oh, he hit it from, it was like 100 and, like, 30 miles an hour or something crazy. And like, that's when they started slowly starting to like register this stuff. But yeah, they have it in every ballpark now. This year in the Cactus League, they started putting them in the Cactus League. Yeah. And they even have it in some AAA ballparks now. They're really going deep, but I'm glad you mentioned Baseball Savant. I feel really bad. I'm forgetting it's Tangier, I believe. And Darren or Doug, I forget the guy's name. You'll probably know him.
Darren Willman is the guy behind Baseball Savant. And I believe he started, I hope I'm getting this correct, he started this independently. MLB found him, hired him, a very smart move. The guy is a genius. And he just keeps popping out more stuff. And Tom Tango is kind of the another name that's, you know, he wrote The Book, which is the book of baseball, a couple years ago. And it really broke down a lot of, you know, creating the optimal batting lineup and when to bunt and when to bring in relief pitchers. So he's been around the game for a long time. He was hired by MLB last year to kind of really help introduce this StatCast system to the audience. And Mike Petriello is probably their main writer at MLB.com who really dives into the statistics, and he provides a narrative that and posts many articles on MLB.com.
Yeah, and for people that are kind of new to StatCast like myself, I listen to podcasts all the time, and they have a weekly podcast for just StatCast. Just search StatCast. And it's like a half an hour. It takes no time. You'll hear me long-winded longer than a half an hour most times. It's super quick. They're so they don't even make it complicated what they describe. And it's fun to listen to. It's like, oh, this guy ran his rear end off over here, or just like so much easy stuff, or this guy hit a bomb over here. But they break it down into the numbers. They explain it to you instead of just reading it on paper where you can get lost by yourself. So and
they explain it with excitement. See, it doesn't sound like they're reading out of a physics book. They are exactly. You could tell they have a passion of the game.
Exactly. They love it. Like, they're loving life doing it. And I have the Baseball Savant page pulled up. I'm glad you mentioned it because I Googled it before we started recording. And it's phenomenal. They even have a link tab for just daily matchups. And they're still developing. And I watched them enter. They were talking throughout the day with different people asking questions. And they're continually working on making it better on feedback throughout the day today. There's pages just literally you can search whatever you want and format your page however you want. It's very impressive. So the more you guys learn about stats, you're going to learn more as we go on through the podcast. This site's going to be phenomenal. Let's get on to the bread and butter of this, what we wanted to talk about, which what really got my attention. And this is actually how I found you was through this app or this Twitter handle. At MLB Barrel Alert is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So kudos to that. But, explain the genius of this.
Sure. Yeah, I hope barrel is a term that's going to be as common as home run. I really do hope that I live in a world that's the case. And why I'll get into what a barrel is. Again, created by those guys that we just mentioned, Darren and Mike and Tom. A barrel is what it's trying to find the best possible batted ball outcome that happens in the game. So what they did in a very intelligent way, I think when their goal when they went into finding that segment and portion of batted balls was to find a combination of launch angle and exit velocity. I will use those two terms quite a bit here during the podcast, but basically how fast the ball is hit off the bat and at what angle parallel to the ground. And finding the combination of those two things that will lead to a minimum batting average of 500 and a minimum slugging percentage of 1,500. So we're talking guaranteed extra bases is what they were trying to do. At least, more common than not, it's going to be an extra base hit with the 500 average. Last year, I believe the batting average was 822. So we're talking about, very, very likely a hit. Only 18% of the time that the ball was caught for an out. And they labeled it as a barrel, which I thought, again, these MLB guys are doing a very good job of making these terms accessible to everyone. Anyone that's played the game of baseball, when they hit that sweet spot on the bat, when you hit it, you know that you feel nothing, and you know that you hit the ball right on what? The barrel of the bat. And that's what I think is so beautiful about the term that they came up with. So I grasp onto that term immediately when I heard it, just like you were talking, Bubba. I listened to the StatCast podcast. I remember the day that they announced all of this, and I immediately attached to it. So I was all about it. Again, on Baseball Savant, they started posting game feeds, so you can watch real time, and it gives you real time the exit velocity and launch angle of every single batted ball. And what's awesome is they highlight green what is a barrel and what is not. So it was pretty cool at the end of last season, and then it even went into the postseason. So Addison Russell and Chris Bryant were hitting big bombs in the World Series last year, you could watch it on their game feed and see that those were barrels. So I dove into it a little bit more in the offseason. I wrote a series of articles, again, that can be found on robaseball.com. RO Baseball is powered by Medium, which is an app. I encourage everyone to download that. I think The Ringer, Bill Simmons' site, is on Medium as well. But Medium allows you to write series, which I posted a series of barrels articles. And I really went into all kinds of things. I looked into which defenses save the most barrels. I looked into what stadiums the most barrels happen, and maybe if there is possibly some calibration issues of the different StatCast systems. Of course, this is a human creation, so there could be human error. I did find that actually it seemed like barrels were a little heavy at Detroit and Arizona. I haven't fully done as much investigation as I can, just from my own resources. I don't have many, but it's just something I want to keep an eye on moving forward. But yeah, check that stuff out that I wrote at RO Baseball. Just search barrels. But then, it dawned on me, I don't know, about March, maybe in the middle of the World Baseball Classic, that I thought it would be very cool to have a Twitter account automatically tell you when these barrels were happening. And I thought, why not try to power it myself? I'm guessing a lot of the listeners here today follow an account called MLB HR, MLB Home Run, which automatically live updates you every home run that is hit. So I was trying to do something in that vein. Now, like I said, Baseball Savant gives you those barrels immediately. So I knew that the information was there and it was available. So right now, we have a team of five people that are tweeting these out manually. So while I'm on the podcast with you, Bubba, I got my other buddies taking care of the Twitter handle while I'm on here.
I wonder how you guys pulled that off.
So we do, of course, would like it to be automatic at some points. We do know that the technology is possible, but it becomes tedious at times, but I got to tell you, I'm learning a lot about the 25th man on everyone's roster because, there was a guy named Warwick Sopold or something like that of the Detroit Tigers who came in junk time, I think over the weekend or maybe late last week. He gave up four barrels in like an inning. I didn't know who Warwick Sopold was, but I know that he serves meat, and the other team just took advantage of it. And what I've done with the site, so I every morning take all of our tweets and I plug them into a spreadsheet and I keep track, just like Baseball Savant does. But then I'm running all kinds of different stats off it, all kinds of formula, and I have it formatted the way I want. So I'm having a whole lot of fun with these barrels. And I just want to make this final point. I know that I've been long-winded here, but I just feel like barrels are – they can't be cheated. One of my articles that I wrote about barrels was that – you know, a home run can possibly be wind aided and it can be stadium aided. I go back to at Fenway Park, you know, we all know that right field foul pole is only about 315 feet. And when you hit a home run 315 feet, yeah, it's a home run at Fenway, but it ain't a home run anywhere else. So what a barrel does is a barrel is a barrel is a barrel. A barrel at Fenway Park is the same as a barrel at Coors Field, is the same as AT&T. You know, it can't be cheated. So when a player is actually hitting a barrel, you know exactly what happened. You know that they made great, great contact. And the same thing from the pitcher's angle, too. I look at it a lot from that angle, too. You know that the pitcher served up a meatball as well. So that's the great thing about barrels. They are not – there's no park factors involved, hopefully, if all the stadiums are calibrated correctly. And weather doesn't affect them as well.
Yeah, that one thing is that Warwick guy was hilarious because I saw your tweet after he got beat up, and I believe he was sent back to the minors that night.
Yes.
Because he got destroyed that game. Like
I think minutes account, after the game, yeah.
Yeah, your account was barrel, barrel, barrel. It was just like one after the other. But it's like you said, it's the perfect name because anybody that played baseball, I played all the way until basically high school, and they always tell you, barrel up the ball, barrel up the ball. Like it's just what you do. That was the phrase. And like you said, when you hit the ball with the barrel, it's a sweet spot. It's just like a hollow feeling. It's just the perfect hit, and it's the perfect name. It's so simple, but it's so perfect for anybody to play baseball. And they need to make like t-shirts and hats. I'll buy stuff. Like it's perfect.
Yeah.
Like you said, I smile when you talk about it because it's just as a baseball person, it's awesome. But I like it when the tweet comes on my timeline. I see the barrel and then I immediately look at the velocity, and then I look who hit it, and I look at the launch angle, and I try to predict the outcome before I look at what it is. Like I try to figure it out myself, and I like how you said it's like roughly 18% of the time it's an out,
right,
is what you're saying, I believe. And I always laugh the guy that gets the out. I'm like, oh, that guy's got to be so pissed. And then it's like the random one that's a ground out. Like, I think, was it last year, Stanton had one of the hardest hit balls, like a ground out to short?
The highest exit velocity last year was a double play, a ground ball double play off the bat of Stanton.
Yeah,
so that's a good point though, Bubba. And I think this is a good thing for, you know, the new crowd that's learning about this is – exit velocity certainly has its importance. Giancarlo Stanton hits the living daylights out of the ball nearly every time he makes contact. But the launch angle is about just as important because, yeah, he hit that ball, I think it was like 120 miles per hour, but it was right into the ground. So it went, you know, I don't remember whose, but it went right to the shortstop and it was a double play. You need that launch angle as well. So it's like, I want to say, you know, Tom Tango has done a lot of research. The ideal launch angle is, I think it's in like the late teens, 17, 18. Now, barrels, though, are, they start, well, it depends on kind of, again, it's a growing range, but you will see 17 degree barrels, but those got to be hit about, you know, 110 or something like that. The lowest, all barrels have to be at least 98 miles per hour, just to give you guys some kind of idea of where it starts. And then so that's a small angle range. It's between 26 and 30 degrees at 98. But as each degree faster, the angle grows. So if you're hitting it 112, 115 miles per hour, we've seen Aaron Judge hit some freaking awesome ropes. You know, the angle range is, you know, I'm going off the top of my head here, but like 15 to 40, you know, it really grows because when you're hitting it that fast, as long as you're getting some up on the ball, you're not hitting it directly into the ground, that ball's going to go a long way as long if you get it a little bit up.
Yeah, definitely. Before we go on to the next section, I know it's kind of off the top of your head. If you have a, what are like some of the top barrel guys at the moment? Do you have that available?
Yeah, sure. I'm glad you asked. So what I did was, in preparation for the pod, was I'm looking at every guy with, and you know, we're still early in the season, obviously only 3 weeks into the season. So we're all, you know, the top guy probably has like 80 plate appearances. So I'm looking at a list of about minimum 50 plate appearances. And the guy who has the most, the highest percentage of plate appearances that have been barreled is who I just mentioned, Aaron Judge. That wasn't by accident, which is pretty incredible. And I think from a fantasy perspective, I'm sure a lot of people are pretty surprised by this. I don't think Aaron Judge was going super high in drafts. He got a cup of coffee last year with the Yankees when they traded off all of their, you know, their Chapman and Miller. They brought him up to get a little bit of a taste of the baseball, and he struck out about 45% of the time. So he wasn't doing too hot. He hit 180. Wasn't expected to do too much, but the Yankees are still basically rebuilding, and they've given him a lot of opportunities this season, and he has been paying off quite nicely. I think most people thought Andrew Benintendi was a surefire rookie of the year, but I think Aaron Judge is throwing his name in the ring. Next highest is Cespedes. Cespedes got off to a mad fast start. He had four barrels in a game, by the way, this season already, but he's been hurt, or I know he had the flu and then he got hurt. But he is still second highest on the list. Freddie Freeman is becoming a superstar. Joey Gallo is another name, just like Aaron Judge, that I think is probably a more surprising name that he's at the top of this list. Now, these guys, you know, sometimes do strike out a lot too, because you know, they're swinging mighty, mighty hard to get the exit velocities this high. But I think we could break it down from a fantasy perspective and a real baseball, you know, a regular baseball perspective. But from a fantasy perspective, we want guys that hit the ball really hard, because they're going to get us those extra base hits. And of course, everything that goes along with them, home runs, RBI. That's what these guys are doing. So if Aaron Judge is still available to your league, or if you're still looking at him from a daily fantasy perspective, I would definitely take a chance at him, because he is hot right now.
Yep, there's no reason for him to be sitting on a waiver wire anywhere. Now, like you just said, that a perfect segue. That's one way to look at this barrel, is these guys that are hitting the ball that hard. That's one, like when people look at hard hit rate and, you know, exit velocity, a lot of fantasy people look at that to look at guys that, if maybe they're not, you know, hitting for a high average or something, that, well, they're hitting the ball hard, so it's going to turn around, you know, keep your eye on him, whatever. Well, this barrel account is a great way to analyze that as well, because they really are stinging the balls really 18% of the time. If they're getting out, if they're a part of that small group, they're having bad luck. Another way to look at this is pretty much every day you're putting out one of the best lists. I'm looking at it right now on my computer. The barrel FIP leaders. I'm going to let you break this down. You have the top 25 pitchers in the barrel FIP and the bottom 25. So basically the ones that give up I'll let you explain before I get tongue tied. I know what it is. I know what it is while I'm reading it, but I'll let you explain it better.
Sure. So, if you guys don't know what FIP is, and again, this is one of those terms that might scare a few people off, but you know, it's basically in the sense of earned run average, which is, you know, the back of the baseball card, that stat that we all grew up with. But I don't know, maybe a decade ago, very smart baseball mind came up with something called field independent pitching, because his theory was that pitchers are only responsible for things that are within their control, which is strikeouts, walks, and home runs. Now, what's very, very interesting about that is that that's the way the game has really gone, and it's becoming more and more those three true outcomes are what we are seeing every day when we watch baseball. 33% of the time, I believe right now, is roughly around where the percentage is that a home run, a strikeout, or a walk are happening. So it's, you know, one out of every three times, one of those three things are going to happen. Some people, of course, certainly have their qualms about that the game is not as exciting because there's not as much play in the field going on. But that's just where we are right now, and that's the guys that are earning a bunch of money. So they created this stat called field independent pitching that just looked at a picture from those three perspectives. Now, I already explained why home runs can have a luck factor attached to them. I mentioned the Fenway Park thing. Let's go Coors Field. We all know that the thin air at Coors create much more home runs than any other park. So those pitchers at Coors, their ERAs are always inflated because they're giving up home runs. Now, the same thing will happen with FIP, though, because they're going to be allowing more home runs than maybe a pitcher with the same skill set at a different park. So what I did, and it was actually my introduction article when I went, my introduction to Barrels article that I wrote over the offseason, was creating a new stat going off of field independent pitching, but instead of using home runs as that factor of one of the three true outcomes, I used barrels. And I explained why earlier, because barrels cannot be cheated. So if a pitcher's giving up a barrel, it's not going to matter if they're at Coors Field. It's not going to matter if they're at Fenway. Those should all be treated equally. So I feel like it's a more refined, a little bit fairer way to analyze these pitchers from the three true outcomes perspective. It's gotten a little bit of kickback. I think field independent pitching got a little bit kickback. And actually, famously, field independent pitching, probably its biggest kickback that it ever got was Houston Street. The I believe actually, I think he retired, was very, very against it because he said there's so much more that happens on the field of play than just those three things. I guess he is right. I said one out of every three times those happen. So the other two out of three times, there is something else happening, a ground ball, a fly ball, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it gives you a good idea of what these pitchers are doing. So, this season I started out right around once we had, I guess, maybe 5 days of data, posting the FIP leaders at robaseball.com. I got a lot of good recommendations on kind of how people wanted to see it formatted. So right now, I'm still, of course, will take any feedback. If you guys want to hit me up on Twitter and you want to see something specific, let me know. Right now, I'm posting the top 25 pitchers that have the lowest FIP. So again, and this is a weighted, it does have an ERA weight, so you can treat the numbers just as you would treat an ERA. So right now, the leader is, shockingly, Jason Vargas, who's actually pitching right now and had not given up a barrel this season until he did today. Matt Davidson of the Chicago White Sox, and P.S., I'm a Chicago White Sox fan, so that was nice to see, hit the first barrel off of Jason Vargas, who is this he's like this 32-year-old guy who's kind of came back from Tommy John surgery and has had this wonderful start of the season. After Vargas, though, we get to some more familiar names, Chris Sale, Noah Syndergaard. So it's not telling us necessarily maybe anything we don't know. Chris Sale's good, everyone. No surprise. Noah Syndergaard's very good as well. Those things aren't surprising, but with any stats, you're hoping that if you're creating a pitching stat, you want the best pitchers to be at the top of your list, or you think that you've done something wrong. But what's, I think, very helpful from a fantasy perspective is maybe some of these names you don't know that are having this great start to the season that maybe you want to start picking up off the waiver wire. So I mentioned Vargas. Amir Garrett had a bad start today, so maybe that's a bad example. But there's other names like Dylan Bundy, Wade Miley, Orioles getting off to good starts, Jared Eichhoff of the Phillies. Good names that if you're on a streaming strategy in fantasy that you might want to take a look at this list. And I also post the bottom 25 too. So maybe there are some guys that have gotten off to maybe okay starts, but if you watch the game, you are seeing that they're allowing more hard hit balls and maybe getting a little lucky. That'll show you that. So which pitchers are giving up the most barrels. I post the barrel percentages along with the strikeout and walk rates as well, just so you can kind of see why, maybe what exact area is making their FIP go up or down. And just so you know, the barrel is weighted more than the other two things. So just to give you some, inner thinkings of how the stat is created. I'm posting that every morning here at robaseball.com. I do think that it's a good judgment of how pitchers are doing at the current moment. I do plan on possibly posting like, you know, a last 30 days, because as we know, a pitcher can have a good month, a pitcher can have a bad month. Like I mentioned, Amir Garrett was fourth on my list going into this morning, and he got destroyed by Eric Thames, actually, of all people. It was a non-barrel pitcher versus a high barrel hitter, and we saw that the barrel hitter won today. So just fun things like that, though, that can happen.
Yeah, and I think just the chart alone from a season long for like streaming pitchers, or you know, if you're looking for guys, but DFS wise, I think it's phenomenal. If you're looking for like you said already, you know, Sale's great, you know, Syndergaard's great, but if you're looking for those mid priced guys or low priced guys that you're trying to decide between, then you go, oh, look at this, or you look at the bottom 25 and you're looking at guys to stack against, and you're trying to be, you know, a little off the wall, and all of a sudden this one name stands out where you're thinking, oh, wow, no one's going to attack this guy because they see X, Y, or Z because they're on this team, or they're facing a team that's not that good. But wait, this guy gives up this many barrels? Like, wait a minute. He might get blown up today. Like, there's a good possibility.
I got to ask you, Bubba, you're wearing a Giants hat. Matt Moore is on the top of my worst FIP leaders. I don't think I've watched Matt Moore throw a pitch this year. I'm sure you've watched a little bit more than I have. Does your eye test tell you the same thing? Is he getting hit really hard?
Well, part of your list there was his last start. He gave up a lot of barrels in Coors Field, a lot. But like you said, barrels have nothing to do with ballpark. Yes.
So I'm sure that they went out. I'm sure they left the park. Coors will still have that effect.
Yeah, yes, a few did. It was a nightmarish occasion. But it's weird because this is where it's going to sound bad. Barrels, yes, have no effect, but he seems to pitch better at home than he does on the road. So he's off to a rough start.
They're not robots. That makes a whole bunch of sense. Yeah.
But that brings up a point I took a note while you were talking there. As you keep developing your data, and maybe it's a part of your articles you wrote this that I'm going to go look into, because I didn't know you wrote these in the off season on barrels. First, Arizona is going to put a humidor in, and Coors already has one. Are you going to maybe try to compare? Okay, I know you said it doesn't matter for park factors, but are you going to try to see if there's any differences at all because it does affect the way, like, yeah, in Coors, the way like the way their off speed pitches work and stuff. So the way they pitch is going to be different, if that makes any sense.
Right. So here's the best way to answer that question from a barrel perspective. Putting a humidor in won't have the same thing. Now it could create more barrels because of, you know, like you said, the grip might be different. And I don't know if I necessarily can give you a straight up answer, a good prediction on that. Now, I'll certainly keep an eye on it. And as I mentioned, Arizona was, they were a little bit higher on barrels, happen a little bit more often at that stadium to a weird rate. And that could be something with the StatCast system. I don't want to be too conspiracy theory here, but there are, you know, certainly this is a brand new system. It's in its infancy, and it's something that I'm keeping an eye on. But the other thing that I do want to mention is I've stressed the fact that barrels cannot be cheated. However, like you just mentioned with Matt Moore at Coors, if he's giving up a lot of barrels at AT&T, they're probably not going to go out of the park. Not, you know, the same proportion is not going to go out of the park at AT&T than it is going to go out at Coors. That still does have an effect. But at the same time, so if, let's say, Tyler Chatwood of the Colorado Rockies, if he's not giving up a lot of barrels, but he's giving up a lot of home runs at Coors, I would trust the barrels more than I trust the home runs. And maybe that is a guy that you want to play when he's not at Coors. You know, you don't really ever want to play a pitcher when they're at Coors. But you can look in between the numbers when you look at these barrel numbers that when Chatwood is maybe at AT&T, when the you know, the stadiums are flipped, that is somebody that you would want to use, because even if he does give up a barrel or two, there's still a better chance that it'll stay in the park. But he's not giving up a lot of barrels as it is as well. So that is somebody that you may want to take a look at when they're on the road.
Yeah, I was just curious because, like in Coors, they always talk about how they can't throw their off speed pitches the same way, like the curveball doesn't spin as much, and blah 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 blah. So I was just curious to see the effect differences. But if the barrels are what they say they are, and I believe they are because the data is backing it up, they wouldn't come out with these things if they didn't test them enough. Basically, what I'm saying. So my question's BS. Before we go on to your most recent article, which I really want to talk about because I agree pretty much with everything you're saying, and it's a very hot button topic. One last question on the stats. You have these pitchers XFIP charts. Do you have any other charts, or are these the main ones you have going right now?
So like I mentioned, I'm keeping track of every barrel hit. So I look at a lot of stuff from both the hitter's perspective and the pitcher's perspective. I am planning on putting out my first article that's barrel related because I feel like 4 weeks of data will be good. I'm on Friday. I'm going to take a look at batters that are maybe getting off to an unlucky start. So maybe you're not seeing the fantasy numbers from these players, but their barrel percentages are starting to tell another story. I want to do the same thing with the pitchers down the road once they get a little bit more innings, so I have a little bit more statistics to back up my points here. And then I even want to look at fielding as well. So, you know, the top outfielders out there are probably going to catch more barrel than, you know, the lesser outfielders out there. Yeah, I have a bunch of spreadsheets as far as stuff on barrels, you know, a bunch of different tabs on my spreadsheets. What else I keep, you know, I'm a baseball, you know, connoisseur. I have I keep track of all 25-man rosters to take a look at, you know, what teams are using, you know, 13 pitchers compared to 12. I have a lot of data as far as ages and all of that lefty righty, you know, per team. I do stuff, some of that stuff on the side. There's not really too much of a use for those things other than it's just more information at my fingertips. And so I'm always ready to help answer any questions that any of our fans or audience may have. And really it's just for the love of the game.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm all about. I love just talking baseball, and I can tell you do too. So that's beautiful. Now let's talk about your most recent piece. It involves the good old – the best way I can say is the stupidity that people say is the unwritten rules of baseball that took place yesterday in Camden Yards. The title is The 5 W's, From What to Why, Fireworks Fly at Camden, basically discussing the Manny Machado, Matt Barnes – throw behind the head of Machado. I'll let you break down what it's about, and then we shall discuss what took place.
So this idea actually came into my head over the offseason. I was going to write a big, big article about why I think the game, it's possible, and I think it should happen, that the people in charge of MLB should try to get rid of just the concept of the beanball, the intentional hit-by-pitch. Really, if as much as they can get rid of any hit by pitch, I think that it is in their power if they wanted to. I didn't get a chance to do it over the off season, and I certainly always had it in my back pocket for, you know, finding a time that I wanted to write it. But something had to be said after what happened yesterday at Camden. You know, the fact that they threw at Manny Machado's head just really irked me to all degrees. The fact that I saw that a few Boston Red Sox fans, a few just idiots that, you know, post that that's what he deserved, and you know, they wish he hit him, and free drinks for Matt Barnes for life. I posted that tweet in my article. I just think it's horrible. I just don't get it. And I'm not trying to be, you know, somebody that doesn't love the history of the game, and I know that that's the game that we certainly grew up with. It was just, you know, part of the game. But I think it's just, it's 2017. I think that we're smarter than this now. I mentioned in the article that they've made rules to get rid of the collision at the plate because Buster Posey got, you know, a huge injury, and they made a rule to take away the breaking up of double plays because there were a few injuries that postseason. Now it's time for this to go away because it's just another way to create injuries. And no one wants to see any of their players, but especially star players, miss time because of not a part of the game of baseball. Part of the game of baseball is to throw it in the strike zone, not throw it at somebody's head. And, you know, there's always going to be, I think, a lot of fighting me on this point because, you know, how do you prove your point? How do you get back at the team when certain things happen? It's just, you know, you don't see many things like that in other sports, I don't think. And I just think that throwing an object at somebody else, whether it's the head or the back or the butt or the leg, I still think they should all be pushed away from this game. And whether that's creating a bigger punishment system, I think that's really the only way to do it. And I mentioned the idea, and this is the idea that I thought of in the offseason, was that you treat them like technical fouls. And for the NBA fans out there, you know, using it, you know, from a technical foul standpoint, I do want to say that, you know, include, you know, players get two technical fouls and then they're out of the game. If you get two technical fouls in a baseball game, you should be out. They also get a season-long running tally of technical fouls. I don't remember what it is. I'm not as big of an NBA fan, but I think it's like 19 technical fouls, and you start getting suspended. I don't think that there's a career tally that happens in the NBA, but I know that fines do add up over time. But I think that should be installed in the game because – you know, a lot of – when I posted this, I posted some a Twitter rant about this before I wrote the article this morning. I was on Twitter last night, and some people said, you know, if it is, you know, per season or whatever or per team, you know, that teams are just going to throw a guy out there that, you know, and that, a guy that is a minor league player basically, that they're just going to throw a guy out there to do the beanball and then send him back to the minors. And what does the team care if that guy gets a penalty? I think that's why I wanted the career rule in place, because that minor league player might not give a, you know, might think twice if he has to do this, even if his manager is telling him, because that's going to basically stain his record and that he's going to have this, you know, I put seven as a career long technical fouls that you get before you're out of the league. That might be too low, but who knows? But if he's going to use one of his seven bullets, quote unquote, to do something that maybe he's not even a part of, he would certainly, I think, think twice if it's going to mean his career moving down the line. So, yeah, I mean, Manny Machado, it certainly hit home a lot because I think that he is obviously a big superstar in this league. He's a face of the team. And if that ball was, what, 6 inches more in? That's probably a certain concussion for Machado. It could even be worse. I didn't want to get too hyperbolic in the article, but you know what I'm talking about. It could have been much, much worse.
Could have been dangerous, really, really dangerous. Like, it's such a fine line on, quote, unquote, the unwritten rules is just a stupid thing to begin with. Like, I like the history of baseball. I don't want to try to fight that. Like, you want to get into the history of baseball, we can get into the DH talk. We can get into a lot of stupid things if you want to. But throwing at someone, I just don't understand it. Like you said, if you want to throw at someone, okay. Like, I'm not a fan of it like you are. I don't get it. But there is zero reason to go above a number, ever. Right. If you're going to hit them in the ass and move along. Like, it's so simple. And you're a professional pitcher, and if you tell me you can't hit that object, you're just lying. And the worst part about yesterday is no one even knew it was coming except the pitcher, because the catcher was setting up outside.
Yep.
And so I believe
the pitcher He denied it too, which is crazy.
It's complete BS.
He said he was trying to go inside. You mentioned the catcher was on the outside.
And the catcher was completely outside. I believe Pedroia. I grew up playing baseball with Pedroia. He was a hard headed, you know, hard ball player, but he was never that kind of guy when he played. I'll be honest about that. I don't see him doing that kind of stuff, but maybe he did. Who knows? I liked how he was very adamant, telling Machado, "I wasn't me," all that stuff, which also kind of seems odd to do it that vocally in front of the whole team like that, throwing his teammate under the bus. But he is the team leader now, so maybe he's trying to make a point like, hey, this is not how we do it, guys.
I certainly have to fault Barnes to a degree, but I think it's all about the attitude of the sport, though. I think Matt Barnes, if he decided to do it, he was doing it to gain respect from his teammates or whatever. And you know,
110%.
Obviously the guy he was trying to defend wasn't a big fan of it, but the reason Barnes was doing it is to, you know, because of this mantra that is all around baseball, and that's what needs to go.
Oh, no, that's the problem. You could see it now. Like, you could have watched MLB Tonight, and some of those ex-pros, half of them probably would have said, oh, he didn't defend Pedroia, and probably that Saturday night or whatever, he got hurt, but Friday night. Probably Friday night and all of Saturday, they were probably all saying, when's one of these guys going to step up and, you know, get even for his teammate? They were probably all talking about it. On all the radio shows in Boston, they were probably all talking about it.
For sure.
And so he's hearing it all. It's just a matter of time, and it's stupid. He shouldn't have done it. But like you said, in the locker room, part of you can't fault him because it's just the stupid way that it is.
Right.
I would never – I fault him 1,000% for throwing his head. That's where he crossed the line. Like, you just don't do that. That is horrible, horrible. But
it's like,
just the way that the –
it's an MLB thing.
Yeah, just – yeah,
Manfred, you know, Manfred, I think Manfred has his priorities not the best
the
way. Not the way that I would do things. He's so obsessed with this pace of play stuff. When there's stuff like this in the game that I just don't know why he would want it to be part of his sport. You know, that's much more important to me than cutting a few minutes off of a game.
Yeah, no, and one of my other baseball podcasts – My co-host and I, we've gone on rants about Manfred and his stupid policies he wants to put into play that have nothing to do with the actual game of baseball, that actually pertain to helping the game of baseball. It's just unbelievable. Like, what real fans of baseball care about are not what he's trying to fix.
No.
So it's mind-boggling. But, yeah, your article was really well done. People need to understand that it's just going to be so hard to police. That's the problem. To police it the right way, because then it's going to be like, well, how are you going to police Machado's slide? That's going to be the next argument.
Right.
It's just all. It's like kids on a playground. Well, what about him? What about him?
Right.
That's what it's going to be all day long, and it's never going to end. Because in the end, these are all kids out there. Basically, that's what it turns into. They're all little children, even though they're Pedroia's our age. They're all just little children and pointing the fingers at each other.
For sure. I would say it's not going to be an overnight change, but I'm surprised how fast that they did the home plate collision and the breaking up the double play. And of course those aren't, you know, 100% foolproof, but at least they did them overnight. I just think that this is the next logical step for them to do something bigger about this. It'll be interesting to see what Barnes gets, you know, even if he gets
it came out
10 games.
It already came out. He only got 4 games.
See, I mean, I guess, well, yeah. No, I don't guess anything, but that's just not enough. It's really not enough.
Yeah, 4 games is embarrassing, and he's already appealing it, which if they even
– a year or two, yeah. Did Farrell get anything? Or?
I only saw 4 games for him, and that's all I saw. I didn't see anything else.
Yeah.
But it came out this afternoon. He got 4 games.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's enough.
No, and doing that's never going to solve the problem.
That's the precedent. Why wouldn't it is the precedent?
And that's the point though. If that's all it is, why wouldn't a middle reliever go and throw at the guy?
Right.
To keep his team happy.
And if he if Machado got concussed, I'll still stay tame here. Then what? Then would the penalty have been bigger? I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, the intent was there.
It's like other things in life, and I don't want to get too deep into other problems, but it's almost like something bad has to happen for a change to take place.
Right.
It's just
stupid. That's what I'm getting at. I mean, if the Posey thing made that rule change happen, and then the double play thing with Utley, I mean, that made that rule happen. What do we have to have to make this hit by pitch thing?
Yeah, did we not see Jacoby Jones over the weekend take a fastball on the face? Like, that pitcher was not throwing at him. He was not throwing at him, but that's what could have happened to Machado. Okay, let's go on a lighter note. I got a just through talking, and I took a couple of notes on stuff we can just BS on real quick. Cool. You said you're a White Sox fan, and I love talking prospects. Okay. So just real quickly, how pumped are you on what you have playing down in Charlotte right now? It is absolutely amazing. I drove 2 hours to Fresno on Saturday to watch Martez pitch for Fresno, and their awesome offense. If I was close to Charlotte, I'd watch them as often as possible.
Yeah.
You have so many fun toys right now.
Yeah, and Pipeline, I think it was Pipeline, came out today with the new rankings, and Makata's back to number one, as he should be, because he is doing amazing right now at AAA. And his strikeout rate has gone down. He is, you know, walking a little bit, but he's hitting a ton of home runs. It's awesome to see. Charlotte, I think, is a little bit of a hitter's ballpark and a hitter's league, but still, he's doing everything that I could have possibly wanted him to do. I think that he's going to be coming up here probably next month after the service time thing happens. So it's just going to bring a little bit more excitement to the ballpark. I have yet to get out to the guaranteed rate field, but I will be certainly making it a point to once Mankata, and then, like you mentioned, some of the other toys come up too. Reynaldo Lopez is probably the one of the that was my favorite part of the Eaton trade. Kopech is awesome too. Giolito, I'm a little bit worried about. But of course, he certainly has the pedigree that things could turn around. That entire AAA, Zach Birdie out of the bullpen throws gas, and the Charlotte team is very, very good. Hopefully, we just watched those other guys across town do this whole thing with their prospects and win the whole thing once their guys matured. So we're hoping for some of the same on the south side.
Yeah, it's looking really bright for you. Like I said, I love prospects. I drive all over California and watch minor league games. And I love the trades you guys made. Like you just said, I was more of a fan of the Lopez part of that than the Giolito part of it. And I might even be a bigger fan of the Dunning part of it, and he's showing it so far.
He's been that amazing. No one could hit his two-seamer.
No, I'm looking forward to his move to Double-A to see how that change works, because – that's where they say most of the big adjustments get made. So I'm looking forward to that. And then because that was just a fleecing trade for Eaton. Eaton's been great for the Nats, don't get me wrong, but that was insane. And then Mankata. Yeah, you're going to see him basically when midnight hits, the phone call will be made to get on the plane. That'll be on the jet will be running to get on the plane to come to Chicago. So, yeah, that's going to be happening. That's going to be awesome. What do you think the next big, because barrels is the new big thing kind of right now, at least in your world, in my world, in a lot of worlds. What do you think the next big stat to kind of take over is? Like Woba was really big and still really big. Barrels is big now. What do you think the next big one is to kind of take over?
Sure. Another thing that that StatCast did, and I think leaderboards came out today on it, was expected batting average, expected Woba, expected slugging, all of the expected. And what I mean by expected is using exit velocity and launch angle determine what is the average outcome with those combinations, and then creating that into a overall encompassing statistic for both hitters and pitchers. You can look at it obviously from both perspectives. So it's all about what I was saying before, especially, looking at it from a fantasy perspective, trying to predict the future as much as possible and trying to even catch things that might be occurring. But they're using all of it. I don't know. We mentioned the StatCast podcast. I don't know if you listened to the one that came out today, but they were already talking about Bryce Harper's turnaround and how Petriello mentioned that he was comparing his arm strength from last year to this year, and it's already been, I believe, like he was throwing about 89 out of the outfield last year at his low point, with there, of course, some rumored shoulder or neck injuries that he never fully admitted to, but he is up to 99. So Bryce Harper is feeling very good right now, but that's what's cool about all this data, that we can see these things, see these trends as they're happening and pick up on them and see what players are starting to maybe make a big leap and certainly are doing things better. And then, of course, you can always I'm gonna give Baseball Savant a little bit dap one more time. You can search any kind of split that you want to on there, home away versus lefties versus righties. You can even go like fastballs above 95. You can really break it down that much. You know, if you want to know how much how well a batter does on curveballs, go ahead, go to Baseball Savant, go to their search thing, and select all of the different things that you want to look at, and it'll give you anything you want. So that's what's great about it. I know a big thing that they're on right now is speed. They're really trying to create speed as measurable as possible. Now, I will say that speed doesn't do a whole lot for me just from my own interest. But what I would like to really see eventually, and I wanted to build it into my barrels, is I think if we put speed, the speed metric, into barrels, that's going to mean more bases. So let me put it this way. So if Billy Hamilton hits a barrel that stays in the park, he's going to get a double or a triple, probably a triple, because he's going to use his speed along with, the hard hit ball. Whereas Miguel Cabrera is probably not going to get too many triples, obviously, there is some possibility there in using speed along with barrels to determine total bases, which obviously builds into slugging, which, are all things that fantasy fans like to see. So speed certainly has the capability of there. And then I love outfield defense. I'm surprised I've gone this far without mentioning it. I actually had a piece go up over the offseason at the Hardball Times. I had my debut there about outfield defense and what teams are doing to improve their outfield defense. Because one point I made, if the goal is to hit a barrel, that means the goal is to hit a ball in the outfield, and that's because the most damage hit is done on a barrel. You want to put your best defenders out in the outfield to go ahead and try to track down all of those barrels that are hit out there. I focused on what the Royals did in 2015, what the Cubs did in 2016. They really built a team with amazing outfield defenses that certainly helped them go all the way. And I was kind of looking into what teams were doing the same thing, some of the moves that teams did in 2017 to possibly, copycat off of what the other two teams have done to win those last two World Series. So Baseball Savant, again, is doing stuff with catch probability. Like I mentioned before, they have some leaderboards that went up today. I have yet to really go into it, but I want to look at it from a team's perspective. Team catch probability is actually kind of a little bit more important to me than player catch probability, because I think that that really shows you what strategies teams are using as far as shifting and placement of the outfielders, how deep they're playing their outfielders, even what outfield combinations are making the most outs. So just some cool data to drill into, and I'm certainly going to get to it at my first opportunity.
No, that's all really cool stuff, and making this game even more exciting for the average fan can even enjoy it more, because it's not just it doesn't feel like you're going to class. You're actually having fun with it, and makes the old school baseball fan actually can dig in and enjoy it a lot more. I'm starting to embrace it and actually digging in and enjoying it. And if I can enjoy it, anybody can enjoy it. So that's really awesome. Really awesome. With that being said, Casey, that pretty much wraps us up. Do you have anything else you'd like to bring up?
No, definitely follow the MLB Barrel Alert. We're doing some fun stuff there. We added distance on our home runs yesterday in our tweets, just because we feel like that's just gives you a little bit more of a visualization of what happened. I think that's going that has certainly pleased people. Eventually, what we'll do instead of even. I think we'll always list the running tally, but we're going to list those percentages to percentage of barrels per plate appearance, because that's really going to tell you how a batter is doing. We're always up for any recommendations as well. Not only at MLB Barrel Alert, if you guys want to see something from me, I'm at Casey Bogoslaw. If you want to see something at the website, at RO Baseball MLB. So any of those Twitter accounts, please follow and let us know what you think.
Yeah, check out robaseball.com. Check out at MLB Bear Alert. You can check out Casey at Casey Bogoslaw. Casey, it was a pleasure, man. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Bubba. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah, we will, man. It was a pleasure talking baseball with you, StatCast, everything. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I did. I have notes all over the papers here. I learned stuff. Hope you guys did too. It was awesome. Everybody, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 37. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next time.
Life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.